Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
They've got their game faces on. Thank God they're on the radio. The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on 95.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the Sports Bar. Call me crazy, Gene, but if you got the best quarterback of all time and his wife spouting off about how he had concussions when he wasn't reported for any concussions last season, that's the kind of thing I would want to know a little bit more about if I had access to the head coach. Nobody in the Boston New England media challenged Bill Belichick on that during his press conference.
It's not even a challenge. This is a straightforward question. Like, did Tom Brady suffer a concussion in the Super Bowl at any other point because his wife said so?
You know who would ask him that question?
Yes.
I know who would ask him that question.
Without question.
It's ESPN.com's Mike Rodak. Mike Rodak, you would have asked him that question, would you not?
I sure hope so. And there's a couple guys back there who I think normally would have gone that route. I mean, sometimes it can be a little bit intimidating, you know, with Belichick, but, you know, I also think sometimes people think that he's not going to say anything, so why even bother? But you still have to ask the question just to get him on the record. So a little bit disappointed on that, but...
Well, he would have answered it the way you expect him to answer, which is, you know, the doctors do their thing, I do my thing, we have this great agreement, it works out great for us.
Right. Something along the lines of that.
Yeah.
So...
He's got them all trained. I mean, like, they're beaten into submission. There's nothing left for them to ask.
That's basically where it's at. I mean, it's a tricky beat because the team is so successful, and if you really try to challenge them and you're going to get some pushback from the team, and given how powerful they are, you know, that can hurt you. But I think that's a pretty straightforward question. Given that it was Giselle, it was on the record, you know, it seems like pretty fair territory to approach Belichick with.
No, we should ask him questions about the NCAA lacrosse final happening at Foxborough. Questions on that. Four of the 18
I would assume he would go on forever about that. He would just filibuster. He's done that before. Give him a good question like that, and he'll just keep talking and talking and talking.
Unbelievable.
Mike Rodak,
have to answer anything else. That's his whole entire strategy.
Mike, today you're out at One Bills Drive was the day you guys got to see the OTAs today. We'll start with Zay Jones. His name did come up. What do we know about his knee sprain here, and do we have a timetable for his return?
Yeah, I mean, they're still terming it week to week. He was actually out there today, whereas we didn't see him last week. He was walking around. I mean, it didn't seem like he was... you know, really laboring or anything. He didn't have any brace on, so it doesn't seem like it's too serious. But I wouldn't expect to see him, you know, probably until training camp, unless they want to get him out there for mini camp in 2 weeks. Which, you know, for a rookie receiver, that's some pretty important time missed, you know, with the starting quarterback, Tyrod Taylor. So that could hurt him. I mean, and we're talking about a situation where you don't know what you're getting out of Sammy Watkins, you know, given his injury history. And I haven't been all that impressed with Andre Holmes, to be honest. He had a couple catches today, but his hands are really inconsistent. I don't think he's the strongest receiver. He has some height, but he's very thin. I mean, I don't make this comparison lightly, you know, given that everything that happened around him, but he almost, when he's on the field, from a certainly on-field perspective, he looks a little bit like Aaron Hernandez. Watching Hernandez back in New England, he's kind of a lanky guy, not the fastest guy, but has a little bit of twitch to him. I mean, I think he's going to need to have surer hands if he becomes a player like that. But I wasn't all that impressed with what we were seeing from him today and last week. So there's Andre Holmes, there's Philly Brown, who hasn't really stood out to me that much. That's kind of been the most glaring problem for me the last 2 weeks watching these practices is just the receiver situation. I don't think Tyrod Taylor is that great today either. Again, it's only one practice. We're not watching the other two practices this week, so we really don't know what's happening, you know, when we're not there. But I would say receiver in the passing game could be problem number one for this team going into training camp.
Covering the Buffalo Bills for ESPN.com, our buddy Mike Rodak joining us in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. Mike, I think you were the first to mention that Gerald Hodges was going to return to Buffalo based on what Sean McDermott was saying. Likely that he was going to return to Buffalo, and then the next thing you know, we've got a linebacker on the roster. Tell us what we know about Gerald Hodges, the latest addition to the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I mean, he was certainly a scouted prospect. He was a fourth-round pick of the Vikings in 2013. He's played some games in the league. You know, played for a bad 49ers defense last year. 49ers had no interest in bringing him back. In fact, I believe he missed the game down towards the end of the season for a violation of team rules, from according to a tweet from Matt Maiocco out in San Francisco, one of their very good writers out there. So, you know, when one of the worst teams in the league doesn't want you back, that can be a little bit of a red flag. You know, obviously, they have a scheme change on defense in San Francisco. The Bills have one as well, but the Bills need linebackers. I mean, they haven't been, Reggie Ragland has been on the field for OTAs. I don't think Preston Brown's a great fit in this defense. I don't think Lorenzo Alexander's going to be a great fit in this defense. I mean, he drafts a couple guys in Milano and Tanner Vallejo, but they're probably special teams guys in year one. So, I mean, unless you're going to roll with Ramon Humber as a starting linebacker, then you kind of need to look for other guys. And I think that's their idea here. So no lock to make the roster. But just one more guy to kind of throw out there in training camp and hope that, kind of like Zach Brown last year, that he sticks for you.
And you're mentioning he was suspended for a game for violation of team rules. I mean, does that go against the high character standard that we're trying to set here with Coach McDermott?
I mean, it was pretty small sample size, I guess, or at least a small, you know, blip for him, because he did play in 15 games last year, but yeah, I mean, on the surface, it might be the way. I don't know all the details of what happened last year in San Francisco, but I mean, there are a few guys who, you know, Deion Dawkins had an arrest in college. There's a few guys they brought in this offseason where, you know, maybe it's not strictly to what Sean McDermott has been preaching in terms of character, but obviously nothing, you know, overly major. I mean, nothing like Carlos Williams coming in or some of the other guys they brought in over the past couple of years when Doug Whaley didn't seem to value that as highly as other GMs do.
Mike Rodak, ESPN.com, joining us here in the Sports Bar, 95.7 ESPN. Mike, what is going on with Charles Clay?
Yeah, it's been an ongoing thing. I mean, that was what scared a lot of teams away 2 years ago when he was a free agent, was the knee. And a lot of teams looked at the medicals and they thought that he wouldn't be holding up in the league for very long. And, of course, the Bills went out and they gave him the transition, or the Dolphins had transition tagged him, and the Bills went out and gave him an offer, and an offer he could not refuse. And they overpaid for him. I mean, I think that's pretty fair to say at this point. It's been an issue the last couple of years where he can't practice on Wednesdays very often because manage his health. It's a maintenance day. It's a rest day, whatever you want to call it. And it looks like that's going to continue to be the case. Because he wasn't at practice last week when we were out there for OTAs. He was there today, but when I asked Sean McDermott about Clay, he said, yeah, we're concerned. Because it's obviously not going to be a huge issue in May, but you get into September, October, November, start to see, you know, a lot more mileage on those knees, and the production may not be there. So when you're looking at a wide receiver core that is already banged up and, you know, has question marks in terms of depth, obviously you want a tight end to kind of lean on, but I'm not sure Charles Clay is that guy. So that's a problem. You know, I just have not been impressed with this passing offense watching in OTAs. And again, it's a small sample size, but just not a whole lot to like there. So that's an issue. I mean, Gary Barnage is still on the market. He was a guy who had 1,000 yards receiving a couple of years ago. They may have to, you know, try to make a real push at him here in the next couple of weeks, you know, by mini camp or at least by training camp, and hope to get him in. But it's the depth at tight end, the depth at receiver, I think are really going to be issues with this team going into training camp and going into the regular season.
Mike, is there a scenario where the Bills unload Charles Clay and it doesn't damage their cap, or you could actually upgrade at the position? Do you have a scenario in mind?
I mean, if you sign Barnage and you consider cutting Clay, I mean, it wouldn't be beneficial to the cap. You're not going to save much this year, but it wouldn't hurt them all that much either. You're pretty much paying them, I think, $4.5 million. You know, if he's not going to be here, you can push money into next year by making a post June 1st cut, which it already is, or it will be post June 1st. Let's say you can do that. I mean, it's not a huge blow financially, but unless you sign Barnage, even then, I mean, you're looking at Nick O'Leary and Logan Thomas and a couple undrafted guys behind them. It's not too inspiring. So, you know, you're not saving much in the cap. I'm not sure, you know, if there's a huge incentive to get rid of him. I don't think there's a trade market for him. So I think the best route might just be to keep him and get what you can out of him this year. And you get more of a financial benefit next offseason if you cut him.
Mike, there was a cut yesterday, I think, caught a lot of people by surprise. That would be Cyrus Kwanjo, a former second-round pick. But there's a lot going on off the field that we don't know about. So what is your read on this situation? Why did the Bills make this move now?
I think it's half and half. I think the off-field stuff definitely did not help his case. You know, obviously being a hospitalization and had to fall at home where he wasn't practicing. And then B, I just don't think he's a great football player. He's not a good football player. He's very average when he's on the field, and he wasn't on the field all that much. Only when Cordy Glenn was hurt. So
no flashes of potential last season. I mean, it did seem like when he filled in for Cordy that there was some efficiency there. Was there not?
A little bit. I mean, I want to overplay that too much. I know, you know, there's some people out there who are really, surprised at that. I'm not in that category. I think he was pretty average as a player last year. I think you look at Deion Dawkins and you have Jordan Mills. Not that Mills is great himself, but you know, you're probably keeping three tackles. So it's Cordy Glenn, Deion Dawkins, and Jordan Mills. Maybe, you know, you keep Vlad Dukas as a backup guard and you can play a little tackle as well. You don't need five or six tackles. And if you really need somebody, you have Shontrell Henderson, theoretically, will come back in week six after he's finishes his suspension, assuming the Bills keep him on the roster. So I don't think it was, you know, totally out of the blue. They cut Cyrus. I think he was probably going to be on the bubble anyway. I just don't know if there was really that ceiling there. And I guess the read, you know, that they had on him working with him, you know, the past couple months is that it just wasn't going to work out. So, you know, it's probably better to let him go now and try to find a job elsewhere than letting go of him, you know, the last week of August, which now there's no 75-man cut down. It's just going to be a 53-man cut down. You have, you know, over 1,000 players being cut basically in one day, and he can get lost in the shuffle there. So I think they kind of did him a solid here by letting him go now and try to get him a fresh start elsewhere.
Well, if you're judging by old regime, new regime, obviously Cyrus Kwanjo, old regime, and if we have this June 1st day coming up next Thursday, that does still mean something. Are there any other veterans that we could possibly be see let go post June 1st, Mike?
Probably not. I mean, that June 1st thing has kind of been less important now the last 5-6 years since the latest CBA, because they've allowed player teams to cut players before June 1st and designate them as June 1st cuts. So if they really wanted to cut somebody and get the cap benefit of cutting them after June 1st, which essentially pushes a lot of this dead money into next year, they could have done it in April. They could have done it in March and designated as a post June 1st cut. So I don't think there's really anybody that, you know, should be afraid. You know, those really don't happen around the NFL anymore. But I mean, looking forward, I do think there are some guys who might want to look over their shoulder by the end of training camp. And I mean, a name I sort of comes to mind to me is Eric Ward. I think he's going to be here next year, this upcoming season, I should say. But I can see a scenario where he's 31, he's coming off broken leg, he's going to count $4 million, $5 million against the Bills cap at least, or they can save $4 million, I should say, against their cap by cutting him. Brought back Ryan Groy, you matched that deal from the Rams, you know, could you start Ryan Groy this year at center and save $4 million? I mean, that would be one name to me. I think it's probably less likely, you know, to happen, and obviously it won't, but the other scenario here, and not to get too technical, but, you know, the compensatory pick formula is another thing to keep in mind. And so the Bills lost Stephon Gilmore for a pretty big money to the Patriots. They lost Robert Woods, pretty big money to the Rams. If the Bills had signed fewer free agents than they had lost, then they would be entitled to probably a third-round pick for Gilmore and probably a fourth-round pick for Woods. However, since they signed too many free agents, they're not entitled to any of those. But what they can do is cut some of those guys before the start of the season, and then they would be entitled to those picks. So the guys who I'd watch out for are Vlad Dukas, because he was signed as a free agent this year, Ryan Davis, defensive end, and I'm blanking on Andre Holmes, who I talked about before. If they cut all three of those guys, then the balance falls back in the favor of free agents lost, and then they can be entitled to a third-round pick next year. So it's kind of a technical process, but if the Bills cut a few of their veteran free agent additions, then they could get a pretty high draft pick next year. So that's something to keep an eye on as we get into July and August and final cuts.
Mike Rodak, ESPN.com. You figured that formula out by talking to Doug Whaley, didn't you? Doug gave you the inside scoop. His parting gift to you was, let me explain to you how the compensatory thing works. Do you after hearing some of the comments earlier this week by Doug Whaley on SiriusXM, I mean, I know that GMs rarely resurface as a GM for another squad. I think there's a couple of instances where it's happened. This guy ain't getting another GM job anytime soon, is he?
No, if they do, then they'd keep him away from microphones. I mean, that's kind of, I think, the underlying message here. This guy has been fired as Bills GM for 4 weeks, and he's still managing to get ripped by, you know, national writers because of the things he says on the radio. Just, it boggles the mind, but every single time he goes on, does an interview, there's just something where you just shake your head, and you're like, what is he talking about? And, I mean, there's multiple instances on Monday or Tuesday when he was on Sirius where he's referring to the Bills as we, and, you know, we are excited about this.
Like, dude, I believe you were the one that pointed out that it almost seemed awkward, right? I mean, it was like...
It's like a lover who gets over, you know, her ex. It's just like, move on. I know, like, there's probably a certain level of him where he wants to be validated. You know, if Sammy Watkins has a great season, you know, if Shaq Lawson and Reggie Ragland have great seasons, that must mean that he was doing well, but I don't think that matters. I mean, like you said, teams don't rehire GMs. They don't give them second chances. Mike Tannenbaum's the one instance in Miami who has gotten a second chance. I mean, Rick Spielman got a second chance in Minnesota. But in general, it's younger guys coming up through the pipeline, much like Whaley was, you know, 5-8 years ago. And once you screw up, that's it. I mean, you don't really have a second chance. You might work in a front office. You know, Ryan Gregson just got hired by the Browns yesterday. And, you know, the Falcons, I think, have 3 fired GMs working there. Phil Emery from the Bears and Rustin Webster from the Titans and Scott Pioli from the Chiefs. But a lot of that is just advisory work. So at most, I think that's where Doug Whaley's looking at. And I think he gets that. He's been in the business. It's just, I mean, to say now, just another thing he said on Sirius, the next time he gets a job, he would have a roadmap and try to find a franchise quarterback. What the hell were you doing the last 5 years? Like, were you not trying to find a franchise quarterback? It boggles the mind.
Yeah, like you would just go down to the franchise quarterback store and pick one up. The thing that I chuckle the most about, and I'd have to imagine that, I don't know if they're rolling their eyes behind closed doors or laughing out loud, Mike, but in regards to my parting gift of 2 first-round picks, did Doug Whaley, in your opinion, have anything to do with that trade down in the first round?
I mean, I think he was the guy who was, you know, picking up the phone the same way that, you know, Jim Oberdorf is the guy who's, you know, negotiating contracts. But again, I think there's somebody who's making the call above them, you know, much like Jim Oberdorf probably gets a directive, go out and sign Charles Clay. I think Doug Whaley was simply tasked with making this trade happen. But I think the real impetus for it was Andy Reid wanting Patrick Mahomes and Sean McDermott wanting a first-round pick next year, or wanting to move down from number 10. So, I mean, Doug Whaley wasn't giving them a parting gift. I mean, I think Sean McDermott could have done that trade. I think any of us could have done that trade. The Chiefs were desperate for Mahomes. He could have set a computer to auto-draft, and it would have made that trade. So, for Whaley to take credit for that was just bizarre. I mean, we asked McDermott about it today. He was diplomatic, but he kind of smirked. I think he kind of read between the lines and, you know, kind of get that you know, he's probably laughing inside at Whaley, but it's just the entire interview with Whaley, man. It's bad. It's just, he's not a bad talent evaluator, but just can't quite figure out what to say, you know, from a public facing role as a GM, just can't figure out, you know, what to say to the public.
And Mike, real quick before we let you go, since you brought his name up, Jim Overdorff, anything new on that? I mean, do we get any sense of how he's adapted to the new regime at One Bills Drive?
Yeah, that's kind of been a question mark. I mean, we've asked about it a few times, and it's basically been status quo. Even Sean said today that, you know, he's been impressed or was impressed or whatever with how, you know, Overdorff and Kevin Meagank, his assistant, have handled the rookie contracts, which isn't really saying much. I mean, rookie contracts are slotted. You know, you can pretty much do them automatically. And he also said, you know, Dermott also said that Whaley did a great job with the draft, and he was gone a week later. So not sure if I'm reading into that too much, but, you know, it's been status quo. He's still in the building as far as we know. I don't know if that will change going forward, but at least for right now, he's still the Bills contract guy.
Mike, so practices are shut down for the week. When's the team back out on the field? They get Monday off here, back on Tuesday for OTAs?
Do believe so, yep. And we're back out there as the media next Thursday.
Cool. Well, we appreciate your time. As always, Mike Rodak from ESPN.com covering the Buffalo Bills, joining us here in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. And we'll be sure to catch up with you soon to find out the latest of what's going on there, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
Enjoy your holiday weekend. Mike Rodak with the Bills Inside Scoop. Provided exclusively by Perry's Ice Cream. Life is a bowl of Perry's.
And if you're just tuning in, what's going on at One Bills Drive? I think we have a story here in the works with Charles Clay. If the coach says he's concerned about a knee, it's not a word you throw out there lightly. Sean McDermott's new at the coaching job, but he's smart enough to know that you say that word, that's going to put everybody's antenna up. And now we're thinking, all right, Charles Clay, is he a safe bet to make this final roster?
I would say no. I would say no one's a safe bet. Let everybody compete and see what happens. And if you can't get on the field because of a knee that's been lingering for the last few years, hey, yeah, he's a weapon. And yeah, you want your tight end to be a part of your offense, obviously, in the Dennison scheme. And all two tight end would be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Could you upgrade over Charles Clay? Hey, Gary Barnage, I don't know if that's an upgrade over Charles Clay, but I would imagine he's going to be a cheaper option than Charles Clay and probably could get you as good, if not better, production than what you got out of Clay last year.
Well, the issue is, yes, it's May, but this is a new offense and you would like him on the field. This might just be a situation where, all right, check back, just like Sammy Watkins, give him the spring off or just limit his work right now. Just make sure he's just doing conditioning things and not football things, because for Charles Clay, you certainly want that production back onto the field. So how do you manage this? Well, yeah, don't risk it right now. It still is May.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.